Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to The Way That Leads to Life. I'm Steve Klein. It's great to have you listening to our program this morning. Hope that everything's getting off to a good start for you today, and that you're looking forward to getting out and worshiping God on this first day of the week. You know, all over the world, Christians come together on Sunday, the first day of the week, to worship the God of heaven, remember His Son, and study His Word. We'll be doing that this morning at the Eastside Church of Christ, and we invite you to come and be with us. We meet at 110 French Way in Athens, Alabama. We meet at 9 o'clock this morning. If you're anywhere in the Athens area, we'd love for you to come and be with us, worship God together, study our Bibles together, and grow together in our faith. If you can't come in person, check us out online. Our services are live streamed. You can go to our Facebook page, Eastside Church of Christ in Athens, Alabama, or go to our website, eastside-church.com, eastside-church.com. Click on the Resources tab and then the Stream Our Services button in the drop-down menu. But come out and be with us if you possibly can today. We'd love to meet you, get to know you, and have the opportunity to worship God and honor Him together. Well, this morning here on the program, I'd like to think with you about the concept of receiving rewards, especially receiving rewards from God. A reward is, according to the dictionary, a thing that's given in recognition of one's service, effort, or achievement. Now, I know there are a lot of religious people in the world, a lot of people who believe in Jesus Christ, who don't understand the concept of rewards as it's talked about in the Bible, who think that God is going to grant salvation to those who have made no effort to receive it. The Bible teaches us that salvation is by grace through faith, and it also teaches us that faith works. It does things. It puts forth effort, and that faith without works is dead. So salvation comes as a result of faith working through love. It takes effort on our part, and that's what God's going to reward. We're going to talk about that more later in the lesson this morning, but just to start, let's ask this question. If you were going to receive a reward, who would you want to receive it from? And what kind of reward would you want? We get to choose the kind of reward we're going to receive. Maybe you have children, or you can remember when you were a child, you go to the dentist, and if you're good and you don't throw a fit while you're in the dentist chair, they let you pick out some kind of toy from a treasure box. You remember getting to choose whatever your toy was. I teach at a school here in Athens, Athens Bible School, and once a month we have some people come in from the First National Bank, and they're helping the kids start little savings accounts, and they give the children small toys if they come in with a deposit for their account each month. The kids love picking those toys out. They love the choice. They love seeing what's there to pick out and receiving their own reward. Well, very similar to that, we get to choose our reward in a sense. We get to choose whether we want to receive our reward from God or from man, for instance. We get to choose who we're going to receive it from. If you had the choice of receiving a gift from some poor criminal or from a rich and kind person of integrity who loved you very much, whom would you choose? The person who loves us very much is God Himself, of course, and His wealth is beyond imagination. Truly, His riches are great beyond compare. And He wants to give you eternal life. Seems to me that we should choose to receive His reward instead of the kinds of rewards that we can receive from men, which are always temporary, which always fade away, which in the end are fairly meaningless. In John chapter 12, the Apostle John tells us about some of the leaders of the Jews who chose to receive their reward from men instead of from the Lord. Here's what John says, John 12 and verse 42. Nevertheless, even among the rulers, many believed in Him. But because of the Pharisees, they did not confess Him, lest they be put out of the synagogue. For they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God. These people were more concerned about being popular than pleasing God. They were more concerned about what men would give them and the status they could have in society and their social standing, rather than what God thought and what God would grant them and give them if they would believe in His Son. They cared more about the praise of men than the praise of God. We need to understand that God is the great rewarder. He is the one who has, as I mentioned a minute ago, all the riches, all the glory, all the greatness. He wants to give you a reward for believing in Him, for accepting His grace, for doing as he says. Hebrews 11 and verse 6, the writer there says that without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. As we come to God, we've got to make that effort to come to God. We got to believe in him and that he will give us a reward for diligently seeking him. In Colossians chapter 3 and verse 23, we learn that all that we do should be done with an eye to receiving our reward from the hand of God. Paul is writing here to servants or slaves among the Christians in Colossae, and he tells them, whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. This is true not only of servants but of all of us as we live from day to day. Whatever our work may be, whatever activities we might be engaged in, if we're truly Christians, we're serving Christ first. We may have a job, we may be employed and be paid by some company or some person who's our boss, but really, we're working for the Lord all the time. And ultimately, our reward is going to come from him. That's what we're working for. That's what we're looking toward. If we receive our reward from men and we look only at what men will give us for the things that we do, we will lose out on the reward from our Father in heaven. Jesus teaches about this in the Sermon on the Mount. In fact, he couldn't be more clear about it when he says in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 1, take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly. So when we're doing good deeds, let's do those to please God. Be concerned about what God sees and not what others see. Jesus says, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Do good in secret. God will reward you. That's the promise. If you do things just to be seen by men so that people will think well of you or praise you or you'll receive some sort of honor, you lose your reward from the Father in heaven. This same principle applies to other things we do as well in God's service, like praying. In Matthew chapter 6, in the next verse, in verse 5, Jesus says, when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues on the street corners, that they may be seen by men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who is in the secret place will reward you openly. Jesus is telling us that our prayer life doesn't have to be public. We're not praying to impress other people. We're praying to communicate with God. We can do that in secret. We should do it in secret a lot. Of course, Jesus is not condemning public prayer or praying in the presence of others. Jesus prayed publicly. He prayed publicly with his disciples. He prayed before the multitudes when he gave thanks for the bread on the occasion in John chapter 5 when he turned five loaves and two fishes into enough to feed 5,000 men. And so, obviously, public prayer is not being condemned here. But what is being condemned is praying in public just to be seen by others. Jesus says, you have private prayers, pray those in private. You want to spend a lot of time with God, you can do that in private. You don't have to show off about it. You don't have to do it just to be seen by men. And if you do, you'll get your reward. People will think well of you, perhaps, but you'll lose your reward from the Father in heaven. Wouldn't you rather receive reward from God than from men? Jesus goes on and makes the same point, really, when it comes to fasting. He taught that his disciples would ultimately fast, that is, abstain from eating and drinking for periods of time for spiritual reasons. And he mentions this here in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6, now in verse 16. He says, moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces that they may appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But when you fast, anoint your head, wash your face, so that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. So if you're practicing fasting or other things to help yourself out spiritually or to strengthen yourself spiritually, you don't have to let everybody know about that. Here were people who were fasting, but they wanted everybody to know. They would purposely disfigure their faces. So someone would say, oh, you look sick. You look like you haven't eaten enough today. And then they would say, oh, well, I'm fasting. That's Jesus says, don't do that to be seen of men. If you want to fast, do that. That will please God. But don't do it to impress others. Do it for your own spiritual benefit and to bring you closer to the God of heaven. So what we've learned so far this morning is that God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him, and that we want to receive our reward from Him and not from human beings. We want the rewards also to be spiritual and eternal and not temporary and not physical. So the next question we can look at when it comes to receiving our reward is, do we want to receive it now or later? Do we want it to be a reward in heaven or on earth? In Luke chapter 16, Jesus tells the story of the rich man and Lazarus. Luke 16 and verse 19, he starts by saying that there was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen, and he fared sumptuously every day. And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. So it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried out and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me. Send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am in torment in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and you are tormented. This rich man had received all of his rewards on earth. They were temporary. The rich man wishes that he had some comforts, some of those rewards in the afterlife, but he'd used them all up in this life. Lazarus hadn't had any good things in this life. He'd been mistreated, but in the afterlife, he was treated with comfort and peace in Abraham's bosom. We want to wait for that great reward. Let's not try to receive all of our rewards here on earth. Our eternal well-being is not about what we receive that's good here on earth. It's about the world to come. The principle of being patient and waiting for your reward is not really appreciated in the world that we live in today, a world where instant gratification is the norm and everybody expects to receive what they want right away, right now. There's no waiting around for something in the future. We can illustrate that perhaps by what's going on in college athletics right now, where many athletes are willing to change schools to take their abilities from one school to the next school just for money, regardless of whether or not that's going to be a good move for them or not as far as their future is concerned. There's not loyalty to the school that they're at. That's not a consideration for many of them. But what am I going to get right now? That seems to be the main consideration. Jesus in Luke chapter 14 tells us this about being willing to wait for our reward and the value of that. He says to a person who'd invited him to a dinner, he says, when you give a dinner or a supper, do not ask your friends, your brothers, your relatives, your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you. For you shall be repaid at the resurrection of the just. You see, the good that we're doing in this world, we don't do it because we expect something back in this world. We don't do it for the here and now. We do it for later. We're saving up treasure in heaven. Our reward, our inheritance is to come. And if we're following Jesus, we need to understand that. We do good. We help others who can't help us. That's what Jesus is teaching. And we'll be rewarded, but we're not worried about that right now. We trust God to take care of us. We are about the business of helping others because that's what He wants us to do in this world. So, do you want to receive your reward now or later? Jesus teaches us that the reward comes later, the reward that is worth waiting for. It's in heaven. It's not on earth. In Matthew 5 and verse 12, Jesus says, "Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven." That brings us to the next point I'd like to consider, and that is, do you want a reward that's temporary or permanent? You know, if we choose earthly rewards, the here and the now, they will not be permanent. John says about everything that's in this world, 1 John chapter 2 and verse 17, all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world, and the world is passing away, and the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. Every physical thing in this world is temporary. It's all passing away. It's all going to disappear. Your soul is eternal. And if you do the will of God, you will live forever with him. He who does the will of God abides forever. Do you want that temporary reward that's not going to last, or do you want the eternal one? In James chapter 1, James writes in verse 10 that the rich can glory in his humiliation, because as a flower of the field, he will pass away. For no sooner has the sun risen and a burning heat than it withers the grass, its flower falls, its beautiful appearance perishes. So the rich man also will fade away in his pursuits. What James is talking about there is, if you're a wealthy person, and many of us who live in America are wealthy compared to the rest of the world for sure, we are much, much better off materially than the vast majority of the people who live on earth at this time. But the thing is, if we're Christians, we can rejoice that we're going to have a great reward in heaven. And the stuff that we have now, if we'll use it for God's glory, if we'll help others out who need, it's no big deal if we use it all up in those kinds of pursuits, because after all, we can't take it with us anyway, and our reward will be great in heaven. We need to keep our eyes on the eternal prize. We have a hope of an inheritance that's incorruptible, undefiled, that does not fade away, reserved in heaven. That's what Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 4. Think about those words, incorruptible. It doesn't fade, it doesn't rot, it doesn't decay. It's pure, it's good, and it's in heaven. We have that eternal prize, and it's worth waiting for. It's worth anticipating. It's worth everything in this world to have that prize, that reward in the world to come. It's compared in scriptures to a crown that is permanent and glorious. Again, in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 4, Peter says to the faithful elders and shepherds of churches that they will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. What a great depiction of the reward that God will give these individuals. A crown of glory, it does not fade away. It always stays glorious. It's like a crown that an athlete might compete for in the Olympic Games or ancient games in Greece. Paul compares it to that in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 25. He says, "Everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. They do it," that is the athletes that compete in the Olympic type games, "they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown." So the crown that the athletes would win in the ancient games would often be made of just a plant, often an olive plant or a laurel or a celery or even a pine tree. They'd take this plant or vegetable or whatever it was, and they'd make it into a circle, and they'd put it on the athlete's head when they won. Obviously, that crown was not going to last very long. Can you imagine being given a crown of celery, which literally happened in some of the ancient games? Well, that's not hardly worth anything. It just symbolizes your victory. It was a temporary victory. It's a temporary crown. But the crown that Christians are striving for, the crown that Christians are running for, is an imperishable crown. It does not fade away. It does not lose its luster or its beauty. It's an eternal thing. Things in this world are physical. They're not eternal. They seem big. but they're not. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 17, our light affliction is for a moment, but it's working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we do not look at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. We are headed for a world that we can't see now. It's an eternal world, heaven itself, and the things in that realm are eternal. The things in the realm we're in now, the things we see and touch and experience every day, this physical world, everything's temporary, but we're going to one that's everlasting. And so our crown is permanent, our crown is eternal, and our home in that realm to come is eternal as well. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 1, we know that if our earthly house, this tent, is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. So each of us is living in a temporary dwelling in this world. We're living in our bodies, and our bodies are all temporary. These physical bodies are not going to last. They will return to the dust. But we have a home in heaven for our souls that is eternal. That is a house not made with hands, made by God, eternal in the heavens. And that's what we're looking forward to. We must keep our eyes on the eternal prize. And we need to understand that the reward that God is giving us is a great reward. It's incalculable. Whereas anything that we would receive in this world is small, is infinitesimal by comparison. The rewards that God gives are great indeed. He gives rewards for doing good to others. As Jesus talked about in Matthew chapter 6, as we already noticed, that God rewards those who are generous, who are charitable. In Luke chapter 6 and verse 35, Jesus says, love your enemies, do good, lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the unthankful and the evil. God's good to everybody. He wants His children to be good to everybody. Love your enemies. Lend. Hope for nothing in return. And the promise of Jesus is your reward will be great. Whatever you have to sacrifice, whatever you think you're giving up in this world in order to do the will of God, the reward that you're going to have will be great by comparison. You'll receive a reward for doing good to others. You'll receive a reward for suffering for Jesus because you're following Him. A lot of people don't like who Jesus is and what He stands for. A lot of people, of course, over the centuries have persecuted Christians, and even still today, for their beliefs and practices, for their stand for morality, for their stand for righteousness and truth. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 11, blessed are you when they revile you and persecute you, and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. And so going through hard times in this life, that shouldn't be that big a deal to Christians, because the reward in heaven is great if we're willing to suffer for Jesus. And the reward in heaven is great for keeping the faith that saves us, the faith that we have received and believed and live by, the faith that generates our actions and our good works. The Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 35, do not cast away your confidence. Confidence is sure faith. Don't cast away that sure faith, which has, he says, a great reward. So holding on to faith in the face of all sorts of things that might create doubt, in face of trials and persecutions and temptations and loss, keep your confidence. Don't cast away your confidence because it has great reward. The rewards that God gives are great. Satan is trying to cheat you out of those rewards. Colossians chapter 2 and verse 8, Paul warns us about that, about the efforts of Satan. He warns us, lest anyone cheat you through philosophy and empty deceit, according to the tradition of men, according to the basic principles of the world, and not according to Christ. It just makes me shudder to think of people who are giving up their relationship with Jesus and the truth of God's word to follow some philosophy that's been invented by men, or some scientific theory that hasn't even been proven yet. when God is going to give you a great reward, Satan's trying to cheat you out of that, trying to lead you away from faith. Again, in Colossians 2, Paul warns in verse 18, "Let no one cheat you of your reward, taking delight in false humility and worship of angels, intruding into things which he has not seen, vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind, not holding fast to the head, from whom all the body nourished and knit together by joints and ligaments grows with the increase that is from God." What Paul is talking about here is people who are losing their reward by listening to false teachers, by doing things God didn't say to do, by making up their own religion, if you will, worshiping angels, doing things that they really don't know anything about, but they are inventing them because they're exciting, they're new, something different, whatever it might be. Hold fast to Jesus. Hold fast to the head, who is Christ. God gives rewards, and we've been showing that this morning. So many passages of Scripture plainly teach this fact, that God gives reward, Jesus gives rewards for doing good and for doing bad. Each one of us will be rewarded according to what we have done. It's important what you do. I know there are religions today that say it doesn't matter what you do, but it matters to God, and it's going to matter to you in eternity what you've done. Jesus says in Matthew 16 and verse 27 that the Son of Man will come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and he will reward each according to his works. Each one of us will be rewarded according to what we've done. Paul says it plainly in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10, "We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he's done, whether good or bad." Jesus is coming. He is the judge, and he will reward according to what you've done. Revelation 22 and verse 12, he says, "I am coming quickly. My reward is with me to give to everyone according to his work." And in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 8, Paul says that each one will receive his own reward according to his own labor. So over and over and over again, this truth is taught. Again, I know it's a truth that many don't seem to believe today, but it's plainly taught in Scripture. Good rewards are given by God for doing good things. In contrast, those who do evil things will be repaid with evil things. They'll be repaid with bad rewards, if you will. In Colossians 3:25, the Apostle Paul says, "He who does wrong will be repaid for what he has done." There is no partiality. So this morning, I'm pleading with you to choose your reward. You realize you're going to be rewarded for what you've done, good or bad. You get to choose. You get to choose whether or not that's going to be a good reward or a bad one. In 2 John in verse 8, John says this, "Look to yourselves that we do not lose those things we worked for, but that we may receive a full reward." There are two things this passage teaches that are so vital for us today. First of all, we work for our reward. We don't earn our salvation. We've sinned, all have fallen short of the glory of God. We need God's grace to be saved. If we had earned it by our own works, it wouldn't be grace. But we are to work for our reward. And secondly, this verse teaches that you can lose your reward. It plainly says to watch out that you don't lose the things that you worked for, but that you receive a full reward. The only way you can do that is by walking the way that leads to life.